Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Petros Papadakis, I love having him on the show. At the old P on Twitter. Catch him on College Football on Fox, the Petros and Money Show. I recently saw a story, and by recently I mean during the commercial break, where an astronaut who had been in space, that's where astronauts go, also dove to the deepest part of the ocean, becoming the first person to do those two things. I have no interest in doing either one of those. Petros Papadakis is joining us now. Would you rather go to space or to the depths of the lowest point of the ocean?
Oh, neither. Please, God, neither. I am not an adventurous person. You know, quarantine was not that bad for an agoraphobe, you know, and I went to work every day anyway in the studio, which was empty, when we do a daily show like you do. So I am not a man of adventure, although I have done some things recently that I never thought I'd do. I went snowmobiling, which is like a snow crotch rocket, as you know. And I, because my wife wanted to, and I shot a gun in Utah. In Utah, you can go shoot like Rambo guns just off the street because my crazy wife wanted to do that too. So those are two, I mean, but I'm not ready to go. I saw that movie, The Abyss, with Ed Harris.
Yes.
Was he in that? Yeah. That's the depths of the ocean. And then space, you got aliens. With the stomach scene and both of those, I'm out, John. I'm out.
Petros is good. Leave it right there. The teams are going to start to return to campus. They're going to start, doing the voluntary workouts. Does that get your juices going as a college football guy and a broadcaster?
Well, not really. I mean, for me, I think we're going to have football. I remember we had this conversation, or I had this conversation with somebody a while back about when I thought football was going to be back for sure. And it was a while before they opened up campuses and let the players work out. One of the weird things about being a college football player is that you're always on campus when there's no one there. That is not a different thing for college football players. When everybody's in spring break, usually you're there working out. You're there for Thanksgiving. A lot of guys, you always read about having to go to a teammate's house or the coach's house. You're there for Christmas break if you have a bowl game, working out, having practice. And you're there all summer long doing your summer conditioning. So opening up campuses for college football players because they're special is really nothing new. It's just now we're in the midst of the pandemic, and it seems like, especially here in L.A., when I'm driving down the 110 right now, and there's more traffic today than there's been in months. You know, it's changing. Things are opening up, and I look forward to college football in whatever kind of form we have it in.
We're talking to Petros Papadakis, Fox broadcaster, football. You can catch him in the football season. He's my favorite broadcaster, as well as on the Petros and Money Show. I just like what you do because you're real. Like, you're not afraid on air to say what you think. I get the idea that Petros was not born with a filter.
Well, you know, it's interesting because right now are very sensitive times. A few years ago, we went through the Me Too thing, and we saw people right and left being fired and canceled, and you're going through something similar now that's even more impactful in society, I would say. And we're coming out of this pandemic where if you have an opinion where you want people to be able to go to the beach or something, a bunch of people text you and say that you want to kill their elderly parents. And, of course, if you say stay inside, there's people that text you that you want to kill their small business. So it's really hard to be right. Now, these days, I'm grateful that I have a decade and a half or so under my belt of broadcasting, so I understand tone, because it's really easy to get canceled, if you know what I mean. And we're just trying to be the guys that entertain people through the day and have a little fun getting them through their afternoon in rough times. The sports world, to me, has always been kind of the toy department, and I sort of treat it like that and try not to take myself too seriously. But I'm glad my filter's better than it used to be. I guess that's a long answer to a good question, but it should have been shorter.
Petros, what does Reggie Bush's return to the USC family mean?
It means they're going to sell jerseys with number 5. They're going to make some money off his likeness again. And it's going to be a nice distraction 1 week from the Clay Helton. They'll have a Fox-themed Reggie Bush game, and they'll bring the pregame show down on the sideline, I'm sure, and celebrate him. But that was done last year. I believe it was the USC-Utah game, and it was touted as the return of Reggie Bush. So he was there already. He was in the USC locker room and around the team in one of the Pac-12 championships games in Santa Clarita. I think Pat Hayden brought him in. So to me, it's really more symbolic than anything. And though I'm very critical of the way Reggie has handled himself, mostly in the aftermath of this thing, I never thought he should have been banned or had to give back his award. For me, those things happened on the field. We saw them. Those guys competed for it. The vacating of victories has always felt kind of shallow and ridiculous to me, reactionary. But at the same time, it's really just going to be a celebration of Reggie Bush, who has a piece of the pie to eat of USC's demise. I thought Bill Plaschke put it very well. It's kind of like a different Troy that he's returning to, like a post-apocalyptic Troy. It's like that movie Return to Oz, you know, when the yellow brick road was all beat up.
Yeah.
And he has part of that. And the thing that's always kind of bothered me is, even though he works in broadcasting, he's a colleague of mine. We've never really been friends. But he's always painted himself more as a victim and not really remorseful about what had happened. And I get it. You know, I'm sure he saw a lot of people take a lot of stuff, too, that didn't get caught. But at the same time, the way they handled getting caught and never really being deposed and never really being held accountable, it most certainly would have helped USC. I have a problem with that. But Pete Carroll's got to eat way more of that pie than Reggie. And he states, you know, everybody just talks about Pete like he's a god. Pete created that environment. There was completely a lack of institutional control. All you had to do was go to Ledoux or freaking the House of Blues Foundation room on a Tuesday night, and you knew what was going on with USC football. It was a freaking mess. And then they dragged their feet for 4 or 5 years while the NCAA tried to investigate. All the NCAA wants you to do is self-impose a sanction and move on. But the NCAA is a terrible entity, and they have a big part in this too, Hayes, and there's hypocrisy and it's contradictory. But with any governing body, John, if you drag your feet, you're going to get hammered. And that's what happened to USC. And it's almost like none of us want to remember it. It's just this revisionist history about the glory of Troy. And yeah, it was glorious, but check out Rome now. It's pretty beat up.
Can USC get back? Because you're right. You talk about 30 scholarships, postseason banned. You look at that era and you go, okay, Pete went to the NFL. Reggie went on to the NFL. Reggie's never really owned it. Carroll has never really owned it. And USC has never been the same. Can they get back?
Well, yeah. It's the only quick fix in the West. The only quick fix for the conference is to hire a real coach that will hire a real staff that has the same kind of structure that an Oklahoma or a Clemson or a Ohio State, where the president of the university, Oregon, is like this, where you guys are, obviously a different animal and a different market. not recognized nationally in the same way as USC. Maybe they should be, but USC moves the needle for all of us on the West Coast. And if they had a university president and an AD and a head coach of high caliber all working together, like at one of these great top five programs that USC is supposed to be and that they recruit against, it would exponentially help us all on the West Coast, and it would immediately change the narrative because you get game day showing up, and then USC versus Oregon is a big deal again, USC hosting Cal or whatever. So you know the drill because it's happened before, and it's a coaching hire. It's not it's not hiring an assistant or an OC or a tape guy. And they tried to hire the hiring of a film guy, a guy that makes hype videos, for God's sake. You know, it's kind of like fixing the wainscoting when the house is on fire. So it's a problem, and it is another season of this. And the thing I'm worried about is what did they promise to Graham Harrell? You know, what did they promise to Todd Orlando? Because Clay Helton clearly has no more power. They got rid of most of his staff that was there to protect him. Are those guys going to be the next head coach, interim to head coach, like the Clay Helton route? Because I think for most people, that's not good enough for USC football to need to be back. And for USC football to need to be back, they just can't get pushed off the ball when they play Ohio State and Alabama and teams like that. It's that simple. And we've seen it.
Oregon's going to want to push people around. Are they going to be able to push people around?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, pushing people around is not something that you just decide you're going to do in the middle of the week on October, right when conference play starts. You push people around all year long. It's part of your mentality. It's part of who you are. It's part of who you live and breathe with, and the way the team practices and comes together. Teams earn a physical mentality through practice. Long 9-on-7 drills, days in pads that nobody wants to be in pads. And that's what Cristobal's building. And I was very skeptical about Coach Cristobal. Still am a little bit down the stretch in games. That first game is still a stinging reminder to many of us on the West Coast. But I love what he's built. And I hate these excuse makers that sit here and say, well, you just can't develop linemen anymore on the West Coast. You know, no kids want to be linemen. There's no good linemen. And if there are, they go to the SEC. That's BS. Recruit guys, watch tape, and develop them. And you will find the same kind of physicality on any team in the West Coast as you find around the country. It's a matter of being dedicated to it and actually doing it. You know, you can't just put the veer option in the middle of the week. You know, it's something you have to breathe. It's the same way with the run game. And maybe it stunted Herbert's career a little bit as far as his numbers, but look where he got picked. I'm a big believer in what's being built. I think the best teams are built from the offensive and defensive line, and that's true at every level of football, from Concord De La Salle to college to the NFL. And I love what Oregon's doing, and it's a joy to watch them, even in all those weird uniforms, lining up and running power. It's really cool. And I never thought he'd be able to pull it off, and he has, and it's impressive.
Petros Papadakis is with us, Fox broadcaster. You catch him this college football season. I kind of feel like college football is playing into the hands of TV, because I think those stadiums are going to be half full or 30% full, and I think a lot of people are going to be tuning in. I think you're going to have a ratings bonanza, and I think it's going to be great. What about atmosphere, though? You're at the stadium. Will it affect atmosphere if you've got 20% or 25% of the stadium full to start the season?
Well, I did a season at Conference USA, so I've been through the wars. You cannot imagine, honestly. You cannot imagine. But I enjoy calling a game no matter what. And I've done plenty of games where there's very few fans there. And we can create an atmosphere, even if we're not there. I'm sure we can create an atmosphere in production. The people at Fox are really amazing. And I'm not just saying that because I work there. You know, I don't watch NASCAR, but you watch, and I'm not a fan, but you just see how they put that together, the short notice that they had, and pulled off those broadcasts, and it makes you say, wow. So they'll do some really cool stuff. I think that we'll have a lot of interesting stuff to see and a lot of cool production stuff. Kinnick's going to be full, they say. You know, the funny stuff is, I remember Texas, was it 3 weeks ago, the governor said, well, 25% at sporting events. And then literally 4 days later, it was up to 50. So I'm thinking sometime in July, you know, we're going to get to 75. And next thing you know, DKR looked the same as it did last year. I don't know. And I think every place is going to be different. I did have to correct my dear friend Bill Plaschke and colleague. We were on some NPR show together, if you can believe how that would sound. And Bill was talking about how players don't need the crowd, this and that. And I said, well, yeah, Bill, you know, they scrimmage all the time. He was saying stuff like that. And I said, yeah, Bill, I get it, but you don't know what it's like to get the ball in your hands and a hole opens up. And there's 80,000 people in the stands, and they see the hole when you see the hole, and that it puts lightning in your body. You know, that's why they say things out there happen fast, because of the crowd. You know, the crowd takes your breath away, and you get up and you're on the ground. Maybe you're in the end zone, maybe it's a 5-yard loss, but you guys know it, going to games at Oxon. Without the crowd, it's not the same place. It just isn't. That's not to say that we shouldn't have football and these guys shouldn't have the opportunity to display their skills on TV in front of millions of viewers. But I think the jury's still out on what's really going to happen as far as how many people are going to be allowed. And every place is different. And maybe Stanford's going to play in a bunker, or who knows even if they're going to play. You know, that's the weird thing. It's the beauty of college football, that we have so much diversity of institutions and geography. But it also raises a lot of problems when it comes to something like this.
Our guest, Petros Papadakis, former USC tailback and team captain, now as a broadcaster on Fox, and he hosts co-hosts the Petros and Money Show in Los Angeles. Petros, I want to go in history here. Might impress you here, but your dad, John Papadakis, he played for USC. He was on the defensive side of the ball. September the 12th, 1970, college football game, Alabama, USC, Sam Bam Cunningham just ran all over the Crimson Tide. Bear Bryant and the SEC had to look around and go, look, we've got to integrate teams. That was such an important game in sort of the history of college football. Did you grow up with stories hearing from your dad about that game and maybe other games?
Oh, yeah. Well, I grew up around the USC football team, so they used to come in my dad's restaurant once a year, even when I was a kid, and have dinner and celebrate. And I remember every team from Eric Affolter, Rodney Peete, to John Jackson, to, I mean, a lot of guys, Shane Foley, Sean Salisbury, you know, it goes on and on. Sam Cunningham is really one of my father's best friends, so that was a story that I grew up hearing. And the interest, and you should have my father on. They wrote a book. It's called Turning of the Tide with an author.
Love it.
You know. Yeah, Don Yeager. And the real interesting part was that Bear Bryant knew that without black players, and the SEC was not integrated. I think there might have been a couple of red shirts somewhere. But he knew that without black players, he was no longer going to be able to compete. And this is 1970. For God's sakes, which is mind-blowing to me, especially at USC, because they had black players for decades and decades and decades at that point. And John McKay, the USC coach, and Bear Bryant were close friends, and they arranged this game at Legion Field in Birmingham to be played, and it wasn't televised. It was only on the radio, and the USC football team was really, their role was to go and kick Alabama's ass and show the people in the stands and all the black people sitting outside that Alabama needed to integrate, to compete. And there's a lot of legends that surround it. And the game, my dad had something like 15 tackles in the game, and I thought he was lying, but I watched the tape, and he did. He was great. He had a great game defensively. And Sam played his first game ever, and he was brilliant. And it is a great piece of college football history. And my dad was a big part of it. And they did. They wrote a book, and it's a cool read if you want to check it out.
Yeah, the person that I heard it from is sort of a college football historian who said, you're having Petros on. You need to ask him about his dad in that game because he said...
You should put him on. He's very lucid.
Let's get him on. And I heard he sings. Yeah. Does he sing?
Yeah, he's music is on Apple and Spotify and all that. He's John Papadakis. He is like a Tony Bennett-style standard crooner. He loves jazz. He's got a pretty good band.
That's amazing.
He's sold out a few shows. I'll be interested to see if he sells out a show if we don't promote it on the radio, but we'll see. He's played at every jazz club in L.A. Like, Miles Davis has played these clubs, and now my dad's up there singing I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
I love it.
I mean, I'm not saying I welcome the pandemic, but I've enjoyed not having to go to one of the shows in a few months.
I love it. What is that? I mean, you have to know, Petros, you're on television, you host a radio show, you're looking at your dad who played linebacker at USC, and then now he's the singing linebacker, ran restaurants, if I have that correct. Just one. but you have to know, you're just following in the footsteps of your dad. You got this from him.
Yeah, it's interesting, because we're trying to get back to this too at some point, but we throw these big radio parties down here in L.A., and we'll go to a bar or even some kind of chain restaurant like a BJ's and just take it over and get some L.A. Charger to play guitar and sing or have Bruce Dern come and talk to people. And we do all kinds of crazy stuff and have live music. And you look around the room and it's 300 people talking to each other, drinking and enjoying each other of all different colors and creeds and ages. And it does feel a lot like Saturday night at my dad's restaurant. So I consider that a compliment. I appreciate you pulling that out for me.
Yeah,
it is true. It is very true.
All right, we got to get Dad on the show. Petros, I appreciate you making time for us and wish you the best. Thanks for this.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, John, and we'll talk to you soon. And my best to all your listeners up in Oregon and everywhere.
All right, Petros Papadakis. There he is. Catch him on Fox. We got to get Dad on the show. Judah Newby, come on. Like, that immediately, I'm like, what, he's a singer? He's, former, played in that big game, Sam Bam Cunningham, sort of the awakening of Alabama football and the SEC just, slapped them to the point where they were
get him on the show.
Yes, let's get him on the show. Alabama had to integrate after that game if they wanted to be competitive. What a great story. Love the storytelling from Petros. And I know Alabama Adriana, when he mentions Birmingham, do you go like fist bump Birmingham?
Yeah, I love, he's talked about Legion Field a few times, and it's so interesting to me being at UAB when they did away with the football program and then also seeing it come back to play at Legion Field. It's cool. It's really cool.
Give us an idea, because for those of us who've never been there, I've been to Birmingham, but for people who have never been there, we'll never see it, sort of the setting of Legion Field in the city of Birmingham.
Well, to be completely honest, I feel like it doesn't get enough attention. That's the reason that they took it away, the football program away from UAB, was because nobody was going to the games. So it's just this piece of historical, there's so much significance that it holds, but I feel like not enough people, maybe the younger generations don't realize and they don't appreciate it enough. Speaking for my generation as well.
Yep.
But yeah, I think it's a great place. I know the classic goes on there every year and yeah.
They don't know what's going to happen to the stadium. For people who don't know the history, the stadium construction began in 1926. It was completed in 1927, and it was named Legion Field in honor of the American Legion. First event was Samford University and Birmingham Southern College played there. But over the years, they expanded to the point where the stadium at its peak seated 83,000. They call it the Old Gray Lady now because it is gray and concrete and colloquial, of course. UAB is the primary tenant now, but UAB is expected to move to Protective Stadium, that is built on the convention complex grounds. They're expected to move there in 2021. So this could be the last season that UAB plays there, and nobody knows what's going to happen to it after this. They got to keep Legion Field. Got to.
Well, wasn't the XFL team playing on that field as well?
I'm looking it up now. The Birmingham Stallions of the USFL played there. The Thunderbolts of the XFL played there. Yeah. The Buffalo Bills and the Jets played there. The Redskins played the Falcons there. The Patriots and Jets played a game there in 1968. It's got soccer that's gone on there, but hopefully they will keep that field there because that's just a cool 93-year-old stadium. Really cool piece of history. All right, Punch and Audio is coming up. We're going to get Petros's father on the show. Yes, we will. That and more ahead. My wife went to get her hair done this morning. A lot of people who have been in quarantine are lined up trying to get their hair done. So she texted me a photo after she got her hair done. And maybe it's the photo, but it looked to me like she had kind of blondish hair in the photo. Maybe I'll have her, when she comes on the show later, tweet it out. But as you're supposed to do as a significant other, no matter what you think of the haircut, you're supposed to say it looks amazing, right? Alabama Adriana, it looks amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. It's never crazy. It's honestly crazy that you're bringing this up because I just scheduled a hair appointment. Like, my mom had texted me and it was just done literally like 10 minutes ago.
Okay. So
it's going to look great.
I'm going to text you the photo, Adriana, because I don't think she'd mind. I'm going to text you the photo of Anna that she texted to me, and then you tell me if I'm just losing my mind. Tell me if she doesn't look a little bit blonde in this photo, like the highlights. A little bit blonde?
No, it's not blonde. It's more red and like a light brown.
Red and brown. I said to her, wow, awesome. Okay, this is exactly what I texted. I said, I love it. Wow. What made you go blonde? She said,
it's not blonde.
She said, it's not blonde. This is the same color I had before. But thanks for noticing. And then right now during the commercial break, I popped out of the studio and she just started laughing. She goes, this is the same color I had. And in person, it does look like the same color that she had before. But the photo, it looks a little, not, you don't see like the ends there, the highlights don't look blonde to you?
They look like a light brown, sort of like an auburn red.
I'll have her tweet out.
You just like to say that word.
No, I was going to say it's not auburn like the school colors. It's auburn like auburn brownish red.
I think I'll have her, because I don't want to do this to her, I'll have her tweet out her own photo of her auburn hair.
Oh, war eagle, baby, war eagle.
Yes, that's exactly what we say when you say auburn. I'll have her tweet out her own photo on her Twitter, so go to her Twitter if you're looking for that photo. But coming up, I'm going to ask her about the hair and all of that nonsense. Are you supposed to say, though, give the guys in a, I thought I was doing the right thing. I was like, I love it, it's great. I should have left the blonde part out.
Yeah, probably, because it's really not blonde, like, at all. But I think
it looks a little blonde to me.
The lighting,
Judah, can I text?
Yeah, please.
I'm going to text it to Judah.
Please.
Judah needs to see it, because you need to see it.
It looks like light brown, but it's not, like, I have blonde at the ends of my hair. It's blonde. Blonde. Like, bleach.
Yeah. Maybe for her, because
yeah,
it's that, you know, it's that jet black Asian hair. And then anything light in it, to me, looks blonde. I don't know. Judah, what do you think?
I'm still waiting, John. You got
no,
the,
I texted it
you
to have you. I hope I didn't send it to somebody else.
It's 503. Yeah.
Oh, it's coming to you now. It's coming to you now. Oh, it's doing the slow upload. I hate when the phone does that.
Dude.
It does that upload.
The grocery store. It happens in the grocery store all the time for me. And
you know why?
Why is that?
In the grocery store, it's because your phone's trying to connect to the grocery store's Wi-Fi.
That's it?
Turn off the Wi-Fi.
Oh.
It's probably a Wi-Fi that's got a password on it, or you have to say accept it in order to get the Wi-Fi. Okay, it happens to me at Starbucks, and that happens to me at the Safeway.
Adriana is showing me the picture through the glass, so I'm going to walk over a couple feet
and
check it out.
Walk over. This is like the fire drill on yesterday's show. Walk over, check out the photo. A little bit of blonde at the bottom. I kind of think like the ends of the hair. Go to Anna's Twitter. I'll have her do it, because if I tweet a photo of my wife, people are gonna be people might be mean. You know, people
on Twitter.
Do that.
People mean on Twitter.
Yeah,
that happens.
I think it's better if she does it.
Okay, I got a look.
If she does it.
It looks great.
Okay, what'd you think?
It looks just great. It looks great. Oh,
smart.
And the text just came through.
Okay. You see a little blonde there at the tips, at the end of the highlights? No? Just me? I was on air. I was interviewing Yogi Roth, and I looked over, and she had texted the photo, and I responded like any guy, any husband's supposed to do. I'd be like, oh, it's amazing.
And now you're backtracking.
It still looks amazing.
It's blonde.
Still looks amazing.
It's blonde, John. You're right.
No,
thank you.
It's not.
Thank you.
That's the blonde face truth right there.
Thank you. Thank you, Judah Newby. Look, bottom line is, Here's my thing about haircuts. I don't want... One time she got her haircut and the stylist... Is that what you call it, Adriana? Stylist? Haircut person?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not a barber.
No.
Stylist chopped off, you know, went shorter than I expected. And I couldn't hide my reaction. And I vowed since then, no matter what, you just go, this is amazing. And then... because there's nothing you can do. You can't put the hair back on. You know what I mean? Like, you can't change the color. It's not like I'm going to go, let me touch that up. You know?
You could get away.
What are you going to do to your
extensions.
Hair? I have no hair, so I'm so into this. What are you going to do?
Well, I chopped my own hair off when all of this started. I had a small mental breakdown. No, I'm just kidding. I really just wanted to... cut all the like dead ends off and stuff. So I cut it basically to my shoulders, and I did that with grooming scissors and by myself. So I'm sure
you cut your own hair?
Yeah.
Kindergartner?
Like a lot of hair. Like probably about 4 or 5 inches.
You pulled it off.
What?
I cut off my hair once. It looked terrible.
You cut your own hair. What's gonna happen when you go into the stylist? Are they gonna be like, who's been working on you, or what's the?
Yeah, she follows me on Instagram, so she's probably seen it and just kind of silently to herself shook her head. But no, it really doesn't look that bad. But I just need a little help to style it up. Great. That's all.
Great haircut. All right, for the summer, yes. Get that going. Well, I'll have Anna tweet out a photo of her hair so the listeners can tell me whether or not I'm crazy. And maybe it's just a passing glance. I went, oh, blonde, because I'm used to seeing like sort of that black hair. Like, literally, I have to go back and look at photos.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but... if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.